This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, we've turned the calendar page to May, and suddenly it feels like we're on the fast track to health reform implementation starting this month.
Well, Mark, the White House has spoken primarily about the immediate benefits of the bill and the need to prevent private insurers from significantly raising premiums. But what I'm hearing from our friends on Capitol Hill is there is an extraordinary amount of work to be done to move from the legislation phase to the implementation phase. And that's what both the states and the government are focused on right now.
I think they're more focused in on how to implement versus whether. At the end of April, states had to tell the Department of Health and Human Services if and how they wanted to set up those high-risk pools in their state to help uninsured adults with pre-existing conditions gain coverage before 2014, when the official health insurance exchanges are up and running. Almost all of the states have responded, with about 30% of the states opting for the Department of Health and Human Services to operate that program for them.
Well, that's a good sign. Hopefully a good indication of what's to come in the next few years as we move forward. You know, the thing is, if states get the choice about how to carry out their own high-risk pool program or have HHS do it for them, I think people are going to accept it a little bit better. Each state is unique. There's lots of options in terms of what you can do. Operate a new high-risk pool alongside your current pool. Establish a new one if you don't already have one. Let HHS take over and carry out the program in that state.
And, of course, the point is to give the uninsured access to affordable coverage. And did we mention the federal government is footing the bill?
Well, popular or not popular, depending on your point of view, I guess. But on that note, let's turn to one state that laid the groundwork for health reform with its own Blue Ribbon Commission starting about 4 years ago and is now poised to move forward with implementing reform. It's also, ironically, one of the healthiest states in the country, and that's Colorado. Colorado Governor Bill Ritter is with us today to talk about how the Centennial State has been able to position itself as a leader in healthcare reform implementation. We're very happy to speak with Governor Ritter today.
And no matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. You can subscribe to iTunes to get our show regularly downloaded. Or if you'd like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of one of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Now, before we speak with Governor Ritter, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, with the headline news.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's headline news. As the benefits of healthcare reform slowly trickled their way in this year, President Obama took the opportunity to highlight these early provisions that have already gone into effect, as well as those that are soon to be in place. In his weekly address, the president said many parts of the reform package are showing results right now.
Already, we're seeing a healthcare system that holds insurance companies more accountable and gives consumers more control.
President Obama said the administration is working on drafting a patient's bill of rights that will do just that, put more power in the hands of consumers and out of the hands of insurance companies.
It'll provide simple and clear information to consumers about their choices and their rights. It'll set up an appeals process to enforce those rights. And it will prohibit insurance companies from limiting a patient's access to their preferred primary care provider, OBGYN, or emergency room care.
Earlier this week, the administration also unveiled First Lady Michelle Obama's action plan to fight childhood obesity. In February, the First Lady launched the Let's Move campaign to solve the childhood obesity epidemic within a generation. The First Lady says for the plan to succeed, everyone has to do his or her part.
No one gets off the hook on this one, from governments to schools, corporations to nonprofits, all the way down to families sitting around their dinner table.
Her action plan presents a series of 70 specific recommendations, such as lowering the relative prices of healthier foods and reducing the marketing of unhealthy products to children. The generational goal is to return to a childhood obesity rate of just 5% by 2030, which was the rate before childhood obesity first began to rise in the late 1970s. In the coming weeks, cabinet members and administration officials will hold events that highlight the ways in which different government agencies can do their part to address the childhood obesity epidemic. This week, we're looking to states that can serve as models for healthcare reform implementation. In addition to Colorado, Wisconsin has gained attention as another state that is in an ideal situation to successfully bring health care reform to all its residents because of the work it's been doing prior to national legislation. Governor Jim Doyle set out on a path 4 years ago to make sure as many people in Wisconsin had health insurance coverage. Karen Timberlake is the secretary in the Department of Health Services in Wisconsin.
Governor, from the beginning, has really believed that Wisconsin and, frankly, all states ought to do what they can do to make sure that they can meet the health care needs of their citizens, and that ultimately there are going to be pieces of this problem that states cannot solve on their own, but there is an awful lot that states can do, and we've really demonstrated that in Wisconsin.
Before national health care reform passed, Governor Doyle used the flexibility the federal government gave states in the Medicaid program to make sure Wisconsin was able to cover everyone, even low-income childless adults, a group that has had some of the most difficulty finding coverage. This led to 98% of the population in Wisconsin having access to affordable health care one way or another. However, due to the high demand from the childless adult group, 20,000 or so people had to be waitlisted for the program.
Our childless adults program operates under a capped waiver, and so not only do we have now today about 25,000 people who are on a waiting list, we have many more people, we believe, who haven't come forward at all because they know that the program is capped. We also, by terms of the waiver, have had to require that people either go without health insurance for a full 12 months before they sign up, or we have had to require that they recently lost employer-sponsored health insurance due to a recent job loss. So all of those conditions exclude people from the program. Those kinds of limits would be lifted from our childless adults program under national health care reform.
Under President Obama's health care legislation, states can apply for an early expansion of Medicaid, beginning this year instead of in 2014. For states like Wisconsin that have already expanded their Medicaid program, enrolling early could provide an added benefit. The provision could mean the federal government for the first time would pick up a portion of the tab for those enrollees. Despite the potential for states to receive increased federal support for their Medicaid programs in 2014, in the short term, at least one state, Michigan, expects things to get worse before they get better. In Michigan, where one in six residents is now covered by Medicaid, low reimbursement rates are forcing physicians and hospitals to reduce services to these patients and even close parts of their hospitals. Although healthcare providers are lobbying against more cuts to Medicaid, the state's budget crisis makes it more likely. States that choose to take the federal government up on this offer to expand Medicaid services now would still have to pay their share of the new Medicaid cost until increased federal support begins in 2014, when the expansion is required of all states. Let's listen now to the interview with Colorado Governor Bill Ritter to learn more about what Colorado has been doing on its own to provide more residents with quality health care, as well as its recent efforts with national reform.
This is Conversations in Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Governor Bill Ritter of Colorado. Welcome, Governor Ritter. Governor, Colorado has made significant strides implementing healthcare reform, and at the end of April, you signed four bills into law designed to increase your healthcare workforce and help consumers obtain policies in plain, easy-to-understand language. It sounds like you're well-prepared for national legislation, and in fact, in reading the report of the Colorado Blue Ribbon Commission, it looks like the commission's recommendations align very closely with the final national reform bill. What are the most important next steps for Colorado to advance the health reform agenda?
Well, I think our most important next steps, Mark, are to look at all the things that are part of the national health care reform and ask, how can a state best implement those? What are the things that we can do? The way I like to think about it is to usher in reform from the national level. So we had already done a variety of things that help us and actually take us down the right path. As you mentioned, we had a commission. It was actually appointed by my predecessor. It was a bipartisan group. I put a few people on it But they made a variety of recommendations, and they really, you know, looked at the situation in Colorado and said, these are the things that you can do over time. We began immediately legislating a variety of things to really work on their recommendations, and we've just done a variety of things that are about ushering in reform now, because you're right, they do the national health care reform and our state efforts mesh very nicely. So I put an executive order in place, and it really is about appointing a group of people that will do the things that are really necessary in all of our departments that you know, will be touched by health care reform. We have 10 different state agencies, or the major agencies, 10 different agencies that we think in one way or another will have to take some action to make health, national health care reform as, I think, feasible as it's going to be in any state.
Well, Governor, you're the chief executive of a state where about 20%, I think, of residents have had no health insurance, so certainly a very important issue. And I noticed in that Blue Ribbon Commission, and congratulations on what a bipartisan group it was, two of those recommendations were to create the individual mandate and to establish the connector or the health exchange. And, of course, we saw that come through in the final health reform. We're curious, how is it received by the residents of Colorado in general? Is the individual mandate something that people appreciate as a strategy to cover the uninsured? And what about the connector as well?
For our purposes, we looked at those recommendations, and really, and if you look at it, the commission recommends sort of incrementalism in our approach. And what we did was decide those are two of the things that need to come from, need to come at the federal level. We've looked at other states that got out ahead, and we looked at some of the difficulties that they had in those states. And so in terms of the individual mandate, it's not that the people of Colorado have said, no, we're not going to do this or we don't want that. What we have said is there's a way to go about this, but we have to stair-step it. So this is our third year of legislating recommendations from the commission, and we have not put in place a mandate or an exchange. And I'll tell you very clearly, that's because I believed it was important to for federal health care reform to happen, for it to happen in a comprehensive way, and for states not to try and piecemeal this. I was a person who was very happy that health care reform got passed. There were things in it I might have liked to have seen that were not a part of it, but that's just the way it was, you know. And so those things, those individual mandates and the state exchanges, are both part of national reform. And then I think that's the wisdom in waiting, is that it did come and we weren't out ahead of it and setting up something that actually wound up not meshing with the national reform piece.
Something you were out ahead of, Governor, was your Medicaid program has gotten some high marks for innovation in terms of expanding coverages as well as improving quality and containing costs through various pilot programs. What are some of those innovations, and how could that be an example for other states?
So there's a bunch of things we've done here, and thanks for mentioning it, Mark. It's always good to be able to talk about your successes. We passed the Healthcare Affordability Act using hospital provider fees. So every bed patient, every, you know, patient bed that's occupied, the hospital pays a fee. We get a matching amount of money from the federal government. It's a Medicaid drawdown, and that's significant new dollars, and that helps us expand coverage in a really serious way. We just passed it last year, and we're setting up the, you know, the coverage expansion now, and that'll be, I think, fully implemented really in another year and a half to 2 years. But that's taken some time. It's just new money into the system. Helps us receive the federal reform in a very serious way because of the expanded populations we'll already be dealing with before the federal reform is fully implemented. We also have established medical homes for children. So now there's 236,000 kids who are provided with medical homes and Medicaid and on our Child Health Insurance Plan Plus program. We have a goal still of expanding the enrolled kids. We've improved the quality of care through what we call care coordination. Certainly, we think transparency and the use of information technology is important, and you saw that as well in national health care reform. Then we have a new pilot called Accountable Care Collaborative, and it allows this state to better contain health care costs, because we still really believe that cost is a part of this calculus, that, you know, in order to improve quality and improve access, you got to drive down the cost of care, or at least arrest the increase. And so we have a whole pilot that's going to work on that. It's client-centered, and it manages care that is focused on delivering, I suppose you'd say, efficient and coordinated care that improves the overall health of clients. So we're doing it on a pilot basis, but I was just in Grand Junction last about a month ago. That's the western part of the state, and they're looking at this and saying this is really what you need to do in a significant way throughout the state, because they've been doing it as a community, and you can see that their costs have been driven down. They were featured in the New Yorker article, where you know they were compared McAllen, Texas, with Mayo's Clinic and Grand Junction because of what they've been able to do from integrating their care.
Well, congratulations on that good work, and you have a well-deserved reputation around the patient-centered medical home for children that we've read about for a long time. You know, another area that is just so critical for states is the workforce issue. Can you tell us a little bit how you've invested or incentivized the development of primary care providers to deliver on care, both in your urban and your rural areas in the state?
We've done things as it relates to nurses, and those were some of the bills that I just signed this past month that has to do with nurse education programs. And loan forgiveness is this big issue, I think, because coming out of both nursing schools but also out of medical schools, kids have such significant debt burdens that they'll gravitate toward a specialty while they're in medical school and not toward primary care. So we're trying to develop loan forgiveness, and we have a small program. We've expanded on that this year, but at the end of the day, significant loan forgiveness, I think, is necessary to really incentivize the workforce to gravitate toward primary care and away from some of the specialties.
Today we're speaking with Colorado Governor Bill Ritter. Governor Ritter, much of Colorado is rural. We know that people living in rural areas have unique challenges. On average, they're older and thus more likely to have a chronic health problem. How have you been addressing the health care needs of rural Colorado residents?
We signed two pieces of legislation in April that will increase and strengthen the workforce in rural and underserved areas. So that's back to the workforce. Colorado Health Services Corp improves existing public and private loan repayment programs for professionals to practice in the rural and the underserved communities, and that is a part of it. The other one that I talked to, the nurse education bill, improves the state's existing nurse loan forgiveness program. But maybe as significant as all that, we've also partnered with United Health, and they're using a technology that is really sort of a remote mobile technology for healthcare. Goes into these counties. We have counties in Colorado where there's no physician practicing in the county, and it gives patients in rural Colorado communities expanded access to physicians who are here in Denver because of the ability to teleconference. You have a health professional in the mobile van, kind of like the bookmobile of my youth, that now has a full medical office that's able to travel from community to community, and then there's technology for teleconferencing. We're looking at the mobile technology, but also eventually at putting actual stationary buildings in rural Colorado, in counties where there's no practicing physician, and allowing people to, again, use that teleconferencing technology. Where it was just video conference with a physician. All the tests are being done remotely, but the results are being fed into the physician's office, and he can diagnose you and diagnose certain things without ever being able to see you.
Very innovative.
Governor Ritter, you're really doing some great work out there. And one thing that you must be very proud of is that Colorado holds the distinction of being one of the healthiest states in the country. It's a lean state and the lowest rate of obesity in the United States. So that's terrific. But you aren't sitting on your laurels. I know you've introduced your own physical activity and nutrition program to get people even more active and engaged in healthy lifestyles. What kind of infrastructure does it take for a state to create and maintain that kind of wellness?
First of all, we are very proud of our state's low obesity rate. But if you looked at one place where the things are heading in the wrong direction, it is still childhood obesity. And I'm really proud of the First Lady, Michelle Obama, and her efforts to reduce that. You asked the question about infrastructure. There is one infrastructure that's totally underutilized in the United States of America, and it's our schools. We put in place an End Child Hunger by 2015. That program we're doing with a group called Share Our Strength. And what that is going into these schools and doing all we can to get kids who qualify for school lunches, school breakfasts, and the summer nutrition programs to get them there. Currently, for school breakfast, I think only about 15% of the kids who qualify for a school breakfast actually go there, and that's because schools haven't thought about all the things, to get kids there on time and when you might actually feed kids, feed them in the second period as opposed to before the first period, and you'll have a greater participation. So that is certainly a part of it. And then, we partnered with Kaiser Permanente as well on a wellness program and a state wellness program. They put money into it and have a state wellness infrastructure for that. But I would say that as it relates to childhood obesity, the most important thing is to focus on our schools. It sounds kind of counterintuitive that you would feed kids more to keep them from becoming obese, but it's actually true that if you feed them nutritious meals at the right time, then kids don't go to, you know, they don't gravitate to junk food and to sodas at 11 in the morning as their first meal of the day.
Governor, your background gives you a unique insight to the difficulties people face in meeting basic human needs. As district attorney, you were a leader in establishing victim services, and you and your wife later spent a few years as missionary volunteers in Zambia. I think our listeners would be interested in how your early work informed your position on health care and human services.
If you live in a developing country like Zambia, and we lived in a remote part of it, the poverty is pretty serious, and I would say abject poverty would be the right descriptive. And, you know, we saw such serious nutrition problems and serious health problems, and what you see there is the sort of the extreme example of what a lack of nutrition and a lack of health care can do to the quality of life of kids and to families. And we also saw, it's interesting, the thing that doesn't change anywhere in the world is that kids' nutrition status and their health status improves with a mother's education. So it's why we've also taken such time and energy to really focus on how we're educating our kids here in Colorado. We have a 25% dropout rate, and what I can tell you is that will impact the health status of those kids that, you know, the dropouts are having. It'll impact their nutrition status and their ability to learn. Something that we as a country, I think, really have to come to grips with, because we work on the education issues, but we don't necessarily integrate those with nutrition or health issues, and they're very much, they need to be integrated. As we debate health care in this country, we have to understand that the debate over health care isn't just about health care. It's about the quality of life you can associate with a better education or a better educated population.
Governor Ritter, we like to ask all of our guests this question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see that excites you in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners of Conversations be keeping an eye on?
I just think that we have some good models here in Colorado that I would turn to, and I have already mentioned Grand Junction. It has a patient-centered clinic for the uninsured. They all using a community-wide health information technology exchange, so it maximizes efficiency and quality. Its Medicare patient or per patient costs are far below the average. But we have an inner-city model in Denver, the Denver Health System. So the Denver Health System is also this model of integrated care, and they can show how they can keep costs down, how they can care for the underinsured, the uninsured, the otherwise underserved in a way that decreases costs pretty significantly. But they're also a model of care for trauma. They're one of the best trauma centers in the United States, if not the best trauma center in the United States. I found that out about 2 months ago when I fell off my bicycle and broke a few ribs. tell you, this is this great health system where we could learn a lot if we thought about integration more and to some extent had tried to curb the kinds of cost increases we see that are a result of competition.
Today we've been speaking with Colorado Governor Bill Ritter, a national leader in healthcare reform. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
This week's bright idea focuses on the first citywide U.S. bicycle sharing program. Denver, Colorado's B-Cycle program launched in late April with 500 bikes at 50 stations around the city, offering Denver residents a green alternative to cars for running errands and short commutes. Members can sign up for a daily or a yearly pass, pick up and drop off the bike at any of the stations around the city, several of which are solar powered. B-Cycle's founding partners designed the program specifically for U.S. cities, universities, and corporate campuses with a focus on health. The bikes are equipped with GPS systems so users can track mileage, calories burned, and carbon offsets. Now, bicycle sharing programs were first made popular in Europe. Maybe the most well-known is Paris' bicycle rental system that has made over 10,000 bikes available at 750 stations around the city. After a successful pilot program at the 2008 Democratic National Convention, where DNC attendees on 1,000 bikes rode 26,000 miles and burned an estimated 818,000 calories, possibly preventing as much as 9.3 metric tons of carbon emissions, Denver became the first U.S. city to officially set up a bike-sharing system. Minneapolis and Boston are planning on installing programs in the coming months, and many more U.S. cities and college campuses are looking at doing the same thing. Denver's bike-sharing program is grabbing our country's attention as a viable transportation option that can help improve the health of Americans and reduce our carbon footprint. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.